following program is brought to you in living color on
DailyGazette.com or wherever you get your podcast.
The Gazette News Group presents the Parting Shots Podcast. Now, here's your host, Ken Shots.
Thank you, Scott Giese, and welcome to the Parting Shots Podcast. Available wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe today. Thanks for joining me from the Parting Shots Podcast Studio in Schenectady, New York. We're going to get you set for the quarterfinal rounds of the ECAC hockey tournament, especially Union, their fifth seed, coming off a 9-0 rout of 12th-seeded Brown last Saturday. They head down to Princeton, New Jersey to take on the fourth-seeded Tigers. Princeton beat out Union by a point for that last first-round bye slot on the final night of the regular season. They had, obviously, Princeton took some time off, and they had exams this past week, so they got that out of the way. So they would be ready to go to face Union. Union looking for its first trip to Lake Placid since 2017. And so we'll see what happens there. We'll talk with players Nick Young, Brandon Burr, Tyler Dunbar, and Parker Lindauer from Tuesday's media availability. And we'll get the Princeton side from second-year head coach Ben Sire. We may talk a little Wawa, too. And then Dan Rubin from USCHO.com. He covers ECAC hockey. We'll talk about the opening round games last weekend and look ahead to the quarterfinals. We'll talk about all four matchups. So coming up, Union-Princeton, the ECAC hockey quarterfinals coming up this weekend. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast.
So, how are the kids?
Well, Emily made the honor roll.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah, we're really proud of her. Tyler, on the other hand, though.
What's going on?
He's been moody lately, just feeling down and not like himself.
Oh, we've been there. Nick was struggling last spring. He was so anxious and stressed.
Really? What helped?
Well, he joined the soccer team. And ever since, he's been a lot happier. He has more energy, he's less stressed, and he's definitely in a better mood at home. It's made a huge difference.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm glad he's getting out of the house, he's getting some exercise, and he's off his phone for once. It's been good for his mental health.
Sounds like it's been good for your mental health, too.
Participating in New York high school sports improves students' physical and mental health. Encourage your son or daughter to get involved. This message presented by NISVA and the New York State Athletic Administrators Association.
Welcome back to the podcast. The Union Garnet Chargers coming off of an impressive 9-0 rout of 12-seeded Brown last Saturday at M&T Bank Center. The 5th-seeded Garnet Chargers moving on to the quarterfinals. Best of three, they'll take on 4th-seeded Princeton down at the historically frigid Hobie Baker Rink in Princeton, New Jersey. Game one and game two. Game one is Friday night at 7 o'clock. Game two, Saturday at 7 o'clock. And if necessary, on Sunday at 4 for game three. The team split the season series, Princeton winning 5-1 in December at M&T Bank Center. Union a month later going down to Hobie Baker Rink and winning 4-2, coming back from a 2-1 deficit after two periods. So to take that game. This is the seventh postseason meeting between the two schools. Princeton has won four times, Union twice. And if you saw Thursday's Daily Gazette and online at dailygazette.com, I looked back at those previous six series. And it went back to 1995, the first meeting. It was in the preliminary round, if old timers remember. Back then, 10 of the 12 teams made the postseason. Union finished 10th that season after a surprising run the year before, where they played RPI, took RPI to three games in that quarterfinal round. Union ended up losing to Princeton 5-2 in that preliminary round game in 1995. That was played on a Tuesday night, so those were fun times. So the seventh meeting will be down at Hobie Baker, as I said. Let's hear from the Union side first. Let's hear from the players, Parker Lindauer, Brandon Burr, who was named to the All-ECAC second team on Wednesday, Nick Young, and Tyler Dunbar.
There you go. Well, guys, after that thrashing put on Brown, you go down to Princeton. Probably won't expect a 9-0 games down there, but how important is it to bring that momentum of what you guys did against Brown down to Princeton for this best of three?
Yeah, it's super important. We've been playing some pretty good hockey down the stretch, which is good. We just can't get away from what we've been doing well and staying in our structure and trusting in each other that we're all going to do the job.
Brandon?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I said pretty well there. It is important, but it's a new series, so we also got to create some new momentum for that.
Tyler?
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of good things to build off of, but, you know, we do a new series, like Brandon said, and we're looking forward to that.
Parker?
Yeah, Brown's in the past for us right now, and we're moving on to Princeton, and obviously we can take some things away that we did well against Brown, but from here on out, we're focusing on Princeton and what we can do to beat them.
After the press, after the game on Friday, Parker said that I'd rather played Saturday than hit that bye. Of course, last year you guys got the bye and lost to Dartmouth. So how important was it to be able to play, get some momentum going into the quarterfinal series with playing that opening round game against Brown?
Yeah, I mean, obviously playing another game, there's always potential for injuries or people getting tired. But in this case, we came out healthy, and obviously a 9-0 game is a lot of momentum for us to bring into Princeton. And just not sitting around for a whole week and having 2 weeks off before a game, I think, sometimes can kind of hurt you. So hopefully we can use this to build momentum into Princeton.
Run down the line, Tyler?
Yeah, obviously I wasn't a part of the playoff run last year, but you know, just hearing about it, I think I know we all feel really comfortable about where we are as a team right now, you know, the performances we've been putting out there. So just continuing that momentum is what we're looking to do.
Brandon?
Yeah, so I mean, not having home ice for this round is probably not the best thing, but I think playing that game would have been more important in general, just because last year I think we came a little slow for that first game in round two. So I think it's a pretty good thing that we got to play and keep fresh.
And Nick?
Yeah, like I like the way we've been playing. So having that game and not taking the week off, I think, was crucial to keeping the momentum. And like these boys said, like obviously home ice is nice and everything, but you know, we're going to play an opponent that we feel is a good matchup for us, and we're excited to take it on.
Well, you guys just, you know, went down to Princeton recently and were able to beat them. So how much does that help to have the confidence of knowing what it's like to go down there and playing and knowing that you can get a win, you know, at their place?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice that we have the belief because we've already done it before. But at the end of the day, it's a belief in the locker room, and everyone has belief in each other. So that's what's the most important thing going in this weekend.
Yeah, it's good. Like, obviously, I think we all know in our room that we can beat any team in this conference on any day, so just another game for us.
You guys have had so much balance inside. I think there's six guys have at least 10 or more goals. How important is to have that depth now at this time of year?
It's super important because you never know when someone might not be on their best game, so to have the depth that anyone can score on our team, it's big for us.
Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of guys in this team that can play, you know, any situation, any role, so you know, just having that, and you know, when things don't always go to plan in playoffs, it's a great thing to have, and we love it.
Parker?
Yeah, we talk about having like a B game when you're not in your A game, and having all these guys being able to produce and put the puck in the back of the net can make up for some people that might have a B game on a day, but going into Princeton, we're expecting everybody to have an A game.
How important will it be to go down there and win and get to Lake Placid for this program for the first time since 2017?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this year, like, leaving our legacy. I know us seniors want to leave a mark on this program. There's been one in the past when they won the national championship, and we want to put a new mark on the program here. So, obviously, getting to Lake Placid is the first step for that.
Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, you can't say much better than that, but, yeah.
Fred?
Yeah, Lake Placid has been our goal since the start of this conference season. So, yeah, it would be nice to get there.
Nick?
Yeah, I agree with all these guys. I mean, we've all had, you know, something circled on our calendars, and Lake Placid is one of them. So this is the one step we need to take to get there, and we're excited for it.
How important will it be to carry that momentum of Saturday's win down there to Princeton?
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. But, you know, like Bergie said, it's a new series, and we got to take every precaution to know exactly what they're going to do and build our own new momentum for this series.
You heard from the Union players. Now let's get the Princeton's perspective from their second-year head coach, Ben Sire, joining me now on the podcast. Ben, welcome to the podcast. How are things going down there in Princeton?
Well, good. It's playoff season, and the weather's getting warmer, so it's great to be in playoffs right now.
Yeah. I mean, you guys had a battle there for that last home ice first-round bye for the ECHA Hockey Tournament. You got it on the final night of the regular season when you got that game to overtime. You had clinched it there with the tiebreaker scenarios. Looking back, I mean, when you saw the tiebreaker scenarios, when the league sent that out, and Union, Harvard, and Princeton were just a separate PDF unto itself. I mean, how crazy was that to see all those scenarios? I think it was 8 scenarios that could have happened.
Yeah, no, it was nuts, and I think it just it really goes to show how tight our league is, and in particular, you know, those three teams that you just listed off. That there's not a lot between you know, different styles, but not a lot of difference between the three teams.
Now, your team, you know, as I said at the open, which is your second year. I mean, do you think you're ahead of schedule with this program right now? Because I mean, I don't think anybody expected the Tigers to be a top four team this year.
Yeah. I guess, Ken, I didn't really look at it like that, to be honest with you. I just wanted to see our guys compete and battle and work to be able to, you know, get an opportunity to succeed. And certainly we're pleased to be able to have a bye. It was something that we wanted to be able to achieve, but it's like I said earlier, we know how hard it is, you know, and to be able to chase consistency in this league is so hard, and I give our guys a lot of credit because they battled right down to the last night. So I guess I'm not really answering your question, but at the same token, I don't know if I really had any expectations in terms of that, other than just wanted to see the guys battle and chase consistency.
I mean, you guys, when you guys came into M&T Bank Center back in December and took a 5-1 victory, very impressed. You guys went on a roll for a little bit at that point. How big was that win to get you guys going?
Oh, I think it was big because I know, like I said, the Union is a great team and has been a great team all year, and you know, that certainly was an opportunity, you know, for our group to be able to build a little bit of momentum from that, but I think it also just showed our group too how hard it is to battle and win on the road in our league, and every team that we're going to play, and in particular this Union group, is just a really tough team to play.
How, just looking at what they've done, I mean, you I think you've had a chance to watch the tape of the 9-0 victory over Brown. What did you see in that game? And I mean, just the fact that Union basically just stepped on Brown's throat and didn't let him up the entire game.
Yeah, and I think that's something, you know, that they have done a great job. I mean, going back to last month, they've been scoring goals by the bushel, and you know, it doesn't matter what team they were playing. I think, you know, Clarkson, they had an 8-7 game in there, and I'm missing another one.
Colgate 7-6.
Yeah. And you know, they're involved. You see it with the league awards coming out, that they have great players there, and you know, they're a talented group that plays hard and wants to get up and down the sheet.
How tough is it, you know, to concentrate on defending one line? Because obviously they have a lot of balance, 6 players with 10 or more goals. Me, even that fourth line has been contributing of late. Me, how do you keep your focus on trying to stop one line and maybe, or try to stop all the lines?
Yeah, I think honestly, I think it's about a balance and playing consistent through our lineup, because, you know, I know you talk about one or two lines, but honestly, when you look at them, I think they're, you know, there's a lot of dangerous parts in their lineup. You know, not just the Burrs of the world, or I know Dunbar's on the back end, but it's not just one or two guys, you know, but it's a number of guys, and to be able to, you know, be able to play the you know, in respect and play the right way against every line, I think is going to be the greatest greatest challenge for our group here this weekend.
Talk about your team. Obviously Kai Daniels leading the team scoring. How impressive has he been this year?
Yeah, I think he's been outstanding. You know, he scored some really timely goals here for us. You know, he's been involved in a lot of offense, plays with a couple of really good line mates that you know, have assisted him, but also benefited from him as well, too. And so certainly, you know, been very pleased with the way that he has gone about things here this year and really battled from start to finish.
Is there a player that's maybe flown under the radar that has impressed you on your team?
Oh, you know, I think one guy that you know, is a big part of that senior group that probably doesn't get, like, you know, maybe the same, you know, touches or accolades or you know, comments would be, you know, Jackson Esmond. You know, as he has played most of the year with Brendan Gorman and Facinelli and you know, he's done a really nice job. You know, he's kind of a quieter guy by nature but a real likable guy. And, you know, I think, you know, maybe some of those that aren't in our locker room probably don't appreciate him. But I can tell you, you know, to a man and to a player in the locker room, there's not a guy that doesn't appreciate what Jackson Esmond brings to our group day in and day out.
Goaltending-wise, Arthur Smith, I think he's a guy who can steal a game for you or two, and talk about his playing in goal.
Yeah, no, he's been solid here for us, and, you know, obviously he missed a little bit during the middle part of the season here, but has played really well and has really given us an opportunity to either stay in games or to win games. He's had some real timely stops since he's been back in the lineup, and I agree with you there, is that he does have that ability to steal a game.
What do you think the keys will be for your team to eliminate Union and advance to Lake Placid?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, obviously we have to slow their transition down. I think, you know, they feed off of that. They love to shoot pucks, and so it's you know, we're gonna have to block a lot of shots here and eliminate them from getting pucks down to the net, because they're really good at it. Their D are very involved. Their forwards love to shoot it. They have some of the highest shot attempts in our league and in the nation, for that matter. And so I think those are a couple of the areas that we really got to really focus in on and make sure we take care of.
Any concern with Rust having the week off? How have you prepared during the bye week?
I'll tell you this, Ken, when you ask a question like that, I think I've learned when somebody asks, are you worried? I've become way more worried about everything in life, you know, since I've become a head coach. So the answer to that is yes. But you know, I think also it's with that being said, we try to stay just on our regular routine here over the last couple weeks here. And compete amongst ourselves here and you know, to stay on our details and enforce our habits so that we're building on our foundations. And I think the guys have done a really nice job of that, but that's been our focus, you know, even before we knew we were playing Union. Obviously had a pretty good inclination that that's probably who we would play, just based on how everything, you know, probably would shake out. Obviously it's a little different when you don't have a week off. But it was also nice. Our guys had exams last week to not have to juggle, you know, trying to fit a game or two in there, and let the guys focus on exams at the same time.
That's good. I mean, that's obviously what they're there for, not just to play sports, but to take care of their academics. I've caught a couple games on ESPN Plus. Games not involving Union when Princeton's playing at home at Hobey Baker Rink. The crowd's been good. I mean, how happy have you been with the attendance there at Hobey Baker Rink?
Well, we've been excited. It's been a real good buzz around campus. Got great support from our administration, you know, and a lot of those have been in attendance, not just our athletic administration, but the university as well, and a lot of local fans here as well, too, and, you know, support from our academic fellows and our deans. And certainly, you know, we've had some crazy students that have shown up here, too, that have been loud and rambunctious, which we certainly, and I should probably speak more to the guys, as they absolutely love that. So we've been really pleased with the crowds.
Well, I think people down in that Delaware Valley need some good hockey because the Flyers aren't providing it right now. As a guy who grew up in Philadelphia watching the Flyers in the glory days, it just pains me to see what they're doing. But, of course, the good combination, you guys wear orange and black just like the Flyers. So.
Sure, exactly.
Well, Ben, I appreciate a few minutes. Good luck this weekend, and we'll talk soon.
Awesome. Sounds good. Really appreciate it.
And enjoy the Wawa.
Yeah.
I had
I'll
a break.
The chicken noodle soup is unbelievable, and so it's there's not too many times I don't get over there for a little snack, you know.
I've been trying my damnedest to get Wawa to look at my tweets or post on their Instagram. I've been desperate to get them to get open a store up here, but they don't see it. Falls on deaf ears. They got stores all over the place around the country, but they can't bring one to New York State.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. It's something else. My wife wonders where our paycheck goes all the time, and I'm like, you know, that's where it goes. She's like, you want to bring lunch? And I'm like, nope, no, I do not.
Well, my son enjoys it. If he goes down to Philly to with me once in a while, he'll be breakfast, lunch, and dinner at Wawa.
Well, how old's your son?
My son's 25.
Oh, okay, so my youngest daughter is funny. I picked him up at school the other day. You'll appreciate this. As soon as we crossed the border into Pennsylvania, she saw the first Wawa, and she got all excited. And she's only 15, so she didn't grow up with it, but it's she absolutely loves it, you know.
Well, strange thing. I grew up in Philadelphia in the 1970s, and Wawa was not a big deal back then. I just don't recall. There used to be where I lived, there's the bottom of the hill, there used to be a 7-Eleven we would go to, but it must have been like in the 80s and 90s when Wawa took off, because it wasn't a thing when I was growing up.
Yeah. Well, they've done a nice job, like legitimately. You know, I'm walking over there right now between meetings to grab a bowl of soup, and, you know, there's not many places you can go, and kind of almost like a Tim Hortons, to be honest, in Canada, mm-hmm. where you can go get like a sandwich and a soup. It's not like crazy expensive, and it's, you know, it's manageable here at the same time, you know. So we're lucky to have it, that's for sure.
And when they have Hoagie Fest, it's incredible how cheap they are with the prices. Yeah. Wawa, yeah. I hope Wawa listens to this and gets up.
I hope you get an NIL deal out of this here, you know.
I do.
So, then you can buy me a coffee when we see each other.
You got it.
Sounds good. I like it. Well, we'll get this done, Ken. Thanks,
Ben. Take care.
That's
Ben Sire. We'll be back with Dan Rubin of USCHO.com to look back at the opening round games and look ahead to the quarterfinal matchups. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast.
It's the most historic conference in college hockey. It's a battle night in and night out. ECAC Hockey, an iconic conference home to 12 of the most prestigious universities and programs in the world, and showcasing the best student athletes in the sport. Top-notch facilities and arenas, incomparable traditions, passionate fans, alumni who go on to become elite professionals, leaders, and champions. ECAC Hockey, there's no experience like it.
Welcome back to the podcast. The opening round of the ECAC Hockey Tournament is complete, and it held serve as all the home teams won, although three of the home teams did not have an easy time, and Union was the only one to have an easy victory. Now we're on to the best of three quarterfinals, and Dan Rubin of USCHO.com, Mr. Overtime in Atlantic Hockey with his job as the play-by-play voice of Bentley there on a Friday night, triple overtime against Mercers in game one of the Atlantic Hockey playoffs. What happened there, sir? You're trying to take my title?
two of the top 20 games of the longest college hockey games, and I've got, or 12 is the top 20, and I've got two of them that I was broadcasting for. So the best of this was that, at least with my dad watching my kids, my parents were watching my kids that night because my wife was out, was that I pulled into my driveway at 11:45 at night, and my dad was in the car with the engine running. He was not sticking around much later than he had. Ken, if me and you were ever in the same building for a playoff game, they should just realize it's never going to end.
Yeah, I mean, just get beds and cots and all that stuff and just sleep there. Yeah, definitely. Well, maybe that could happen next weekend.
don't wish that on us.
Well, let's ask you about the opening round games. Three of the games, the visiting team ended up scoring first. The home team rallied. The only one was Union crushing Brown the way they did, 9-0. I wrote about the fact that Union, you know, did what they're supposed to do in a playoff game, put a lower seed to bed early and just kick the living crap out of them. And they did that, putting the game away, the 5-goal third period, and a period that they fired 26 shots on goal, and Brown had 22 shots on goal for the game. But then we saw an overtime game at Harvard against St. Lawrence, and Harvard had a rally to win that game. Clarkson had a rally to beat RPI, and what's the other series there? Colgate had to come back from 2-0 down to Yale to win that game. So were you surprised that some of the home teams had the battle to win?
I'm not necessarily surprised that they had to battle to win. I'm surprised that it was as close or for as long as it was for all those games. Like the hard, it's a cliche, right? That the hardest thing to do is end somebody's season, and in a one game playoff, like, everybody, if they have something left in the tank, if they have anything left in the locker room, for the seniors, for a coach, for whatever it is, they're going to give you their absolute best in that particular playoff game. I know I saw that this weekend, right, with Mercyhurst.
Yeah.
But when you have these teams like St. Lawrence and they're up 3-2 in the third period, you're wondering what they can do to close it out. The fact they didn't close it out isn't surprising. You knew they were going to give Harvard all they could handle. The one game, I guess, that I would say was surprising was the fact that Yale was one up. Like, I did not think Yale would lead in that game, but that they were up two halfway through the second period. So they were giving Colgate the business for half of that game, and it takes one goal to turn it around. You get another one before the end of the period. You score in the third to win it in regulation. But I never would have had Yale going up two on Colgate and making them work halfway through the second period. I do think they would have played it tight, but I didn't think Yale had the depth. I didn't think Yale had the skill. I didn't think they had the cohesion to give Colgate a run for as long as that game lasted.
I mean, as I mentioned, Union 9-0. I mean, it's one of those games, you worry about the fact that, yeah, it's a 5-seed, 12-seed. We know Brown was struggling all year, but you just, yeah, that one game playoff, you never know what's going to happen. And yeah, Union was up 1-0 after the first period, and he's like, you're still a little nervous. But then 3-goal second period, 4-0, so you're breathing either. And then the way they put that game away and just ended Brown's season the way they did, that's just, I mean, that's something that, you know, Union's been rolled into the playoffs of on a six-game unbeaten streak. Now it's at seven. So were you impressed with the way Union did their job against Brown?
Absolutely. And I think part of it was that Brown – look, I had said last week that the thing that Brown used to have going for it was that Brendan Whitett knew how to rally the troops. He knew how to – say something before a playoff game that would get that team shortened and fired up, and they'd be able to go out and win shift by shift and play a style of hockey that wouldn't win them regular season games, but knew how to win a playoff game. I think what we saw in the second period in particular was that Brown, when I don't know if it was the second goal from Lindauer or if it was Colby MacArthur's power play goal, but at that point they were just kind of tired. They looked like they were done. They'd been through the ringer and it was time to be done. And I think in the third period, the fact that they took a penalty, gave up a goal, took a penalty, gave up a goal, took a penalty, gave up a goal over the span of 3.5 minutes, I think was a sign just at how far that team just was done. And Mark Diver made a really good comment on social media that I think struck me, and maybe it wasn't what I expected going into the game, was the fact that Brown team had been through so much this year emotionally with everything that happened on campus before the end of the first semester. Yep. Mm-hmm. Their head coach going out on family medical leave, that maybe it was just time. And, you know, for them, what struck me when he brought that stuff up was it was time. They just didn't have anything left in the tank. And to Union's credit, Union kept scoring. I mean, that's what you're supposed to do. You don't want to pull your foot off the gas pedal in a one-game playoff, especially when you're at home, especially when you're getting those power plays in the third period. Is it a 4-0, 5-0 game that just got away? Hey, that's what happens in playoff hockey. And I don't think by any stretch Union, you know, was doing anything malicious with running it up or anything like that. I just think Brown, when that third period rolled around, that team was just, it was time to be done. And they still had to skate off those 20 minutes, and that's where it got away.
Well, one of the power play goals they scored in the third period came from the fourth line. So they didn't have their best power play units out there, and they still scored on the power play.
Yeah.
And one of the penalties, the Russian player, it was, I'm name drawing a blank right now. I don't have it in front of you, but
Zadvernik.
Yeah. He took one of the, I said this on social media, it was a stupid penalty. He pinned Ben Muther's ball in front of the Brown bench, and there's nowhere, the puck's nowhere, and the play's not anywhere near them. It's like he took four penalties in the third period.
Yeah, and that goes back to what I saw against RPI when he took a game misconduct and a contact to the head in the first period, and then Brown sat him out in that last game against Union. So, or they had, because he had been ejected from the game against RPI. He didn't play against Union. He comes back in this one and takes a bunch of bad penalties. That was just a player that, like I said, they got to the end of the season, and mentally, I think it was just like you could not have. Maybe this is the case for why all 12 teams shouldn't make it, or maybe this is the case for why a team maybe shouldn't be in a conference tournament, is the fact that coming down the stretch, they finished 12th, the numbers are going away, the players are just kind of losing their head, and they just didn't have anything in there. And so that's when you make stupid penalties, that's when you make selfish, stupid plays, and if you're Union, you do what you're supposed to do, run different sets, run different guys out there, and score goals. And every single thing that happened was just kind of like, oh, man, can this game end?
And they could have had 10, but Lucas Buzio was a high stick. I mean, it was close. I mean, Josh Housley did challenge it. I mean, it was a good challenge. I mean, if you lose it, you lose the timeout, but it's no big deal in a game like that. So, well, let's look ahead. We got the quarterfinals starting Friday. The matchups, top-seeded Quinnipiac against 8th-seeded Clarkson. Number 2-seed Dartmouth will be hosting Colgate, the 7th seed, 3rd seeded Cornell takes on 6th seeded Harvard, and 5th seeded Union travels to 4th seeded Princeton. Let's begin with the Quinnipiac-Clarkson series. Quinnipiac won their 6th straight ECAC hockey regular season title, but it wasn't easy. It came down to the last night of the regular season, and we know their history in the ECAC hockey tournament. They usually win the quarterfinal game, and then they get to Placid and fall apart up there, but is this team primed to finally maybe get that monkey off their back and win an ECAC hockey tournament title?
I mean, if not now, then when? The one thing that I'll give to Quinnipiac, at least for this year, is the fact that this is a team that put together and built a roster that took all season to gel, and it's still not necessarily the best it's not the best Quinnipiac team we've ever seen, but they do the different things well, and they have players who can play at every level, and they've done a really good job of winning when they absolutely had to find a win. And there's a reason why they're going to be a top two seed in the in a regional, that they're going to have the home change, the top change, at least while in the first round, because I don't think they're going to drop past the. I don't think they're going to lose to Clarkson, and I don't think they're going to drop enough if they lose in the semifinal. But then you look at the players that they have a lot of experience, and that's kind of helped them outside of hockey. Like the players who came in, they recruited ECHL and AHL guys onto the roster. Like, they have old, grizzled hockey veterans who are now playing big hockey at ECAC. Maybe that's why things are going to be different, is that they're not just a team built from your typical freshman, sophomore, junior, transfer. This isn't the same Quinnipiac team, maybe.
What are we doing recruiting players from the minor hockey leagues?
it's legal.
I know.
I can tell you, but I don't think it should be, but it is, and that's why you have a guy like Graham Swart, who's from the ECHL predominantly, played a handful of games in the AHL. He plays 36 games for this team with a plus minus of 15, and he was born 2003, so he's a freshman, and he's 23 years old. So, I mean, this is what college hockey is. I don't agree with it, but that's part of what Quinnipiac is able to say, like, hey, if we're able to get these guys and we're able to make it work and provide them a new opportunity, then until this changes, this is how we're going to build our team. And if it works, then that's what's going to work. And this is far from the only team that's been able to do it. They combine it with very good players. Guys, you know, Ethan Wittenbach is just a natural scorer. He's great. You have Marcus Vitacek there from the Q, from Moncton. He's great, but he's also a 22-year-old freshman. So these are all guys that this is what's going to be from the CHL, the ECHL, the minor pro, major junior that's going to filter in. And Rand got ahead of the curve by getting all these guys in. I don't agree with necessarily the system, but while it's the system, he's doing the right thing to do it.
Yeah, until they tell him not to, he can't complain about it. Let's talk about Wittenbach. I mean, he's had an amazing freshman season, 24 goals, 33 assists for 57 points. He's going to be, I would think, not only the Rookie of the Year in ECAC hockey, but probably the Player of the Year. But the other question is he going to be with the Bobcats at the end of after the season ends?
That's a good question. And that's part of the one thing I can always credit Quinnipiac is that it very seldom loses major players unless they're going pro. So, unless it turns up that he should go pro, like when he has that conversation, I don't think he's going to necessarily transfer out, just because that's not the Quinnipiac MO. And because he was only a fifth-round draft pick, I don't know that Calgary is going to be able to offer him off the jump the type of money that would convince him to go, mm-hmm. because he's only had the 1 year in the USHL and now 1 year of college. I think next year is probably the year where he really earns himself some money if he takes another step and becomes a 65-70 point scorer.
What does Clarkson have to do to pull off the upset?
Play Clarkson hockey. Like, that's the one complaint I've had all year, is that Clarkson has not been Clarkson. The loss against Cornell, they just haven't been in the games that they've lost. When you've looked at them and been like, nah, this isn't the same Clarkson team. The loss to Princeton, the loss to RPI, the game against Union when everybody seemed to score a goal, the going to overtime against Brown, it has not been the Clarkson team of years past that would win a game 3-1. 4-1. They've lost games 4-1 to Quinnipiac and Dartmouth. They lost Dartmouth game 3-1. Mm-hmm. They lost to RPI 5-1. But they are not the team right now. They have to find a way, which I think maybe the playoff game maybe helped them find it a bit, because that was a 2-1 game. They had to come from behind. They generated some offense. So they have to be able to play Clarkson-style hockey, get on the power play, win the battles, do the little things that has been inconsistent all year and be able to do it over a three-game series, because I don't think they have the depth and the talent to go out and sweep this team. But win the first game, anything's possible.
I mean, RPI, I mean, they pulled goaltender Nate Krawchuk with 3:28 left in the third period last Friday, and they had some chances, but Clarkson played well, kept the and Soderwall played well, and they were able to grind out that victory. So I mean, that could be a confidence booster for him.
Absolutely. And the thing about Clarkson too is they're a team that's nearly 50-50, right? When they go goals for, goals against, they're about three goals per game, three goals allowed per game, right smack dab in the middle of most categories. I know the power play might be trending a little bit further down, but I think everybody's power play is up. Like 18% only being in the 40s is kind of absurd to me. Like used to be the opposite way around, where 18% would get you a little bit higher than that.
Yeah.
But I do think that the offense is good enough to create chances, and that's what the numbers kind of indicate. So that's why I think even the RPI game, getting into the right position against RPI can help them, because they also played that one game and Quinnipiac's been off for a week. That bye, sometimes team comes out slow just because they haven't had the time and the other team's got that one game underneath it.
Yeah. Let's go to the Dartmouth-Colgate series. Dartmouth started off well. I think won their first 11 games, and they sort of peaked a little bit maybe too soon. They were up and down, up and down. I mean, they finished second or tied for second with Cornell, got the second seed. Is this team primed to finally to win an ECAC hockey tournament? They're getting there consistently now.
I think Reed Cashman might be the best coach in the ECAC right now in terms of what he's been able to build. And you have to remember that you go back to post COVID, that Dartmouth was blasted into the Stone Age like the other Ivy League schools, with the way that they have their academic requirements. They can't accept incoming transfers the same way unless they academically qualify and the right things come in. They have a higher and harder academic profile per se, where the rigors are maybe a little bit different than some of the other schools in college hockey. I'm pointing mostly at the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's very, very, very different. So him being able to build a team into a 19-win team is by itself an impressive accomplishment of understanding his university and understanding how to build from there. Now, getting to an ECAC championship, I think, is probably the next step in winning it. It's been forever since Dartmouth has won anything. So to even get to this level is a tribute to what they've been able to put in. Now, I do think Colgate might be one of the worst head-to-head matchups for them. They were able to win that game earlier in the year when Dartmouth wasn't losing games.
Yeah.
But I don't love the matchup against Colgate. Luckily, it's in Hanover, which I think is a big help. But I don't think I would be much happier if I were Dartmouth and I were seeing Union, mm-hmm. or I were seeing Princeton, or I were seeing Harvard. I wouldn't be. I'm not as thrilled if I'm seeing Colgate come.
What's going to be the key for Colgate and to maybe pull off the upset?
I think Colgate's going to play good in the back. The goaltending statistically this year has not been amazing. The defense has not been otherworldly. I think some of the games skew some of those numbers, like Quinnipiac scoring five goals against them, Cornell scoring five, the Union game when they scored 13 goals, and then RPI came back the next day and scored six and beat Colgate 6-1.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the defensive effort in shutting down Hayden Stavrov is going to be there. We know Colgate's going to score two goals in a game. We know they can get there. They have to stop Dartmouth from getting to three.
Yeah, that, how do you stop Stavrov?
Tell him a bedtime story. I don't know. Tie his skates together. Keep him. Scratch the stick tape. And make sure that he doesn't do something with it.
Steal his sticks.
Yeah, glue his gloves together. I think he's gonna be factor into one goal per game. I don't think you're gonna try to shut them out. Like I said, if you can keep him off the sheet enough and limit the damage of the top line, you can keep it you got to keep them from getting to three goals. That's the only thing. So you let that top line maybe get one, even get two, win a game in overtime if you can get to three. But that's the that's the key there.
Let's look at the Cornell Harvard matchup. This rivalry is going back a long way. Casey Jones in his first year as the head coach, taking over for Mike Schaefer. How do you think he's done? And tied for second, end up being a third seed, and not too shabby.
No, not at all. And they've got to be happy with how this year turned out. Anytime you have a coaching conversion transition, there's some growing pains. And last year, I would think that Casey took over a much more active role over the course of the year, especially the second half. That was part of the transition. It felt like he was starting to do more and more. And there were a couple weekends when he was the man. But it also wasn't his program. And being able to get the conference championship for Schaefer was awesome. I think that Cornell this year is more well-rounded and is better. They're also healthier. Last year they were. It seemed like everybody went down injured at various point in time. But I really like Cornell's makeup, and I love the fact that Casey has taken that exact style of play that I was talking about, Clarkson-style hockey, and implemented it without fail this year on a Cornell team that I think could do some damage even in the national tournament.
Harvard has been inconsistent. They were down 1-0, 2-1, and 3-2 to St. Lawrence. They win in overtime and a goal. And I don't know if you saw the game at all or had a chance to look at the highlights, but they reviewed that goal. I understand they review all overtime goals to make sure, but when you have all four officials in the scores table looking at the video, they're looking for something, and it may have been a hand pass or a face-off violation, but it was taken forever, and this is why I always I'm a champion of miking the referees, and so they can let the people, the fans, know what's going on, what they're reviewing. And I was sitting here in the Gazette offices and watching that game and say, "What are they reviewing? What are they reviewing?" It's this Harvard, like I said, Harvard team that's been up and down, and I just don't know if they have the firepower to get past Cornell.
No, and I think the thing to remember about Harvard is that there is a rebuild that's going on there. That you go back post-COVID, they had 2 years coming out of COVID where they were able to keep the team together because they understood the value of a Harvard education. They understood the value of playing for Harvard. So that year that Harvard didn't play, nobody transferred out. They all took the gap year. They all did the what they needed to do to stay in the Ivy League system in that was in place for all of those players. I think the players themselves came out those next 2 years and didn't miss a beat. That's why they won 20 games back-to-back seasons, went to an NCAA tournament, were great. They won the conference tournament in 22. The 2 years after that was the stripping down of that roster, where you saw the team implode, for lack of a better term, mm-hmm. and go back to studs when they finished eighth, largely because the teams that were in 9 through 12 just weren't good. And two of them were like Brown and Yale, who haven't been able to build their way back up. This year, it gets a little bit better. They had a couple more wins. You go from a 7-win team to a 13-win team, a little bit closer to 500 in the league with 9 wins. You move up one spot because the league was just better all around. But I like that Harvard is building up and is getting closer to being a team this year that's over 500. That was last year, I should say. Over 500, they get up to 11 wins in the league this year. They seem to be doing all of the right steps on a four-year process. This is year three, so is it about getting past Cornell? Can they get past Cornell? I think they're a little too inconsistent. But I do like what Harvard is building, and maybe next year they're back to a 17-18 win season.
And then the 4-5 matchup, obviously I'll be paying attention to this. Union at Princeton, they split the season series, winning in each other's building. This is the seventh postseason meeting between the two teams. I'm going to have a story in dailygazette.com and a print edition Thursday detailing the past six matchups. Prince has won four of the six matchups. Started in 1995 with that preliminary round game. The Tuesday night preliminary round game was the 10 teams instead of the 12 made the playoffs back then. But they've had some interesting matchups over the years, and I foresee this thing going the distance this weekend. What do you like about both teams?
I saw Princeton when I saw Princeton earlier this year, and they came to the Bentley Arena for two games. They were an NCAA tournament team. They were on the right side of the bubble. They were, I think, maybe they were on the wrong side of the bubble, but I think they were like 18 or 19, or they were close to being in. And then they lost two games in Waltham. Actually, it was a loss and a tie. I think they lost in the quote unquote lost. It was a shootout. Mm-hmm. So loss and a tie, and that was it. Like, you can't lose to Atlantic Hockey teams and still stay in the bubble when you're a bubble team.
Yeah.
So they go bubble out. After that point, something's been up with Princeton where, like, when they've been good, they've been exceptional. Beat Cornell, beat the wheels off of Cornell, I think, in that game too.
Yeah.
I think they looked great in that game at home, but wind up losing a shootout to Colgate. Lost to Harvard, lost the shootout to played in a shootout against Dartmouth, lost to Quinnipiac decisively twice, lost to St. Lawrence pretty badly. So there's been this issue since I really saw Princeton that has existed largely in back with the defense. I think part of it is that Tyler Rubin got hurt and missed some time. He didn't play in his homecoming. No relation. I think there might be a relation. he's from the next town over from me, but I'm not sure. There might be relation there. They just didn't have what they need to do. Now, on the other side, Union has been a team that I think is way better than is the opposite, where they weren't in the bubble. They were never in the bubble. But you have a 22-win team that's never been in the bubble because you've played Atlantic Hockey teams, Mercyhurst, Niagara. Like, you're not playing teams that are going to help your NPI, but you don't get the 22 wins by accident. And forget about the Brown 9-0. It's been a while since Union lost a game where you looked at Union and said, hey, they played bad. Like, they didn't look good. I think you got to go back to Yale for that. So
no, I think actually go back to I think Quinnipiac, even the worst of those. That was the worst game, and of course, as you mentioned, the Yale game. But
yeah,
the game at Quinnipiac, where they were actually up, and then controversial major penalty against Tyler Dunbar. He got a kneeing penalty, got kicked out of the game, and Quinnipiac just took advantage of it. But I think what we have seen, I mean, you look at the 8-7 loss to Clarkson in overtime. They were down several goals in that game. They came back. The Colgate game, the 7-6 Wild game, they were down 4-1 after the first period, came back and won that game. It seems like this team doesn't have any quit in itself. I know I talked to Josh Algie after that Quinnipiac game, and he said the guys were feeling sorry for themselves and just lost focus. And now they're bound and determined to get to Lake Placid for the first time since 2017. I mean, they have a lot of heart. They have balanced scoring, six guys with 10 or more goals. Their first 20-win season since the 2018-19 season. So this team, they're peaking at the right time. Those kind of teams are dangerous.
Very. And the thing that is, when you have a number of guys who have 10 goals, number of guys who are pushing 30-point seasons, the one thing that I've learned is that in playoff series, coaches will shorten their benches. They'll go roll three lines. They'll roll two defensive pairings. What I think the key is if you don't have a roster that does that. Like, I saw that this past weekend. The teams that was the biggest thing in the triple overtime game the next day, was that the next day, because you rolled four lines and you were able to roll four lines, not even that you did, maybe you were shortening your bench at some point, but the fact that you had four lines kept you fresher for the long haul of a playoff series. So if you're going to have three scoring lines like Union has, that's going to help you get through, because honestly, Princeton doesn't have that, which means you're going to be able to stick your third line or fourth line out for a goal and get production out of it, whether it's a goal, whether it's stopping the top line from Princeton from getting a goal, whether it's holding certain people off the score sheet. And by doing that, you're turning it around on a team that has to waste a shift, for lack of a better term, on a shortened roster. So somebody either has to come from out of nowhere, or your guy's just going to get tired over the full three-game series. And so the depth of Union, especially the second half of the season, is pretty electric.
And Cameron Corpy started in goal, the Michigan transfer, started well, then had a little lull in the middle of the season, and also suffered a lower body injury, but he came back, and he's played spectacular hockey and blanking Brown, and he's, what, I think, five shutouts on the season now. He's back to what he was in the start of the year, and that's, and they have, Union also has some good depth and goal with Braden Gillespie, the number two goaltender, who was playing well for a spell in Corpy's absence. So I think this is going to go three, only because, you know, Princeton, they do have that home ice advantage there at historically frigid Hobey Baker Arena. So, but it's going to be a fun series to watch, and I think Union's going to prevail.
I think so too, and I think the big part of it too is that they're just better in back against Princeton's offense than Princeton is going to be against Union. You mentioned Corpy. I know that he hasn't needed or he has won a significant amount of games over the last month. I don't think he's lost since the Quinnipiac game. But I do know that he, when you look at his numbers, he's never been tasked with making 40 saves. I know there are a couple 30 saves in there, that ring a bell, just because he was facing faster teams like Harvard. But the fact that you only need him to stop maybe 20 to 25 shots, and he can stop 20 to 25 shots, is something that Princeton has a harder time countering. Arthur Smith, bread and butter goaltender, but if you can get up to 25, 30 shots on him, he's going to let in a couple. That's just how he is. I mean, he's a decent goalie, but you're not going to get goalied in the playoff series by Princeton. I think you can get goalied by Union.
Yeah. I'm going chalk in this quarterfinal round. How are you picking these games?
Me too. I think the one team that maybe is not going to win its series, if there is one, as much as it kills me to say it, would be Dartmouth, just because I don't like the matchup with Colgate in particular. But I ultimately think that one's going three, and there's probably an extra session in there. But I think I think top four advance here.
Well, we'll be looking forward to talking about that next week. What's that?
I was going to say, I do think Colgate, I want to throw one other in there too, is that I do think Union can beat Princeton. And I do think that if they do, it's going to happen. You know it. You're going to know it in the first 15 minutes of the first game.
Interesting. So, well, Dan, appreciate it as usual. And we'll do this again next week as we get set for the Final Four in Lake Placid.
Sounds good.
All right, thanks. That's Dan Rubin of USHO.com. We'll be back to wrap up the podcast and have the latest winners in the Daily Gazette's auto racing contest in just a moment. The Daily Gazette has some great subscription deals happening. Sign up today at www.dailygazette.com. And as always, when credibility matters, trust the Daily Gazette.
If you really want to know what's going on in your community, you have to read the Daily Gazette. We don't take a side. We're right down the middle, and we're going to get to the truth. Our reporters and photographers are out in the field bringing you updates every minute with trust, accuracy, and integrity. From the first page to the last page, independent, probing journalism. We're finding out what's going on in the community where nobody else is covering. It's who we are. It's what we do.
Back to wrap up the podcast. The Week 4 winner in the Daily Gazette's auto racing contest was Jason Kranke of Saratoga Springs with 75 points. Very impressive. Jason wins a $50 gift card. Congratulations, Jason. The VIP winner was Dwayne Leach of All Seasons Equipment with 60 points. I'll announce the auto racing contest winner's name, and that winner's name will appear in Saturday's Daily Gazette. To play, go to dailygazette.com and click on the auto racing contest banner. Just because COVID-19 mandates are easing, that does not mean you should relax. Be vigilant. If you have not gotten vaccinated or received a booster shot, please do so. Do it for yourself, do it for your family, and do it for your friends. Don't forget to download the Daily Gazette app and sign up for our e-edition so you never miss a headline. Subscribe today at www.dailygazette.com. We have a lot of great specials going on. When credibility matters, trust the Daily Gazette. That wraps up another edition of the Parting Shots podcast. I want to thank Brandon Burr, Nick Young, Tyler Dunbar, Parker Lindauer, Ben Sire, and Dan Rubin for being a part of the show. If you have questions or comments about the podcast, email them to me at shot, that's S-C-H-O-T-T, at dailygazette.com. Follow me on X, Threads, and Blue Sky at Slapshots. The views expressed on the Parting Shots podcast are not necessarily those of the Gazette News Group. The Parting Shots podcast is a production of the Gazette News Group. I'm Ken Schott. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time. From the Parting Shots podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, good day, good hockey.